From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. On this edition, our focus is North Carolina House District 16, which covers Pender County and a portion of Columbus County, according to the newest maps. Chris Millis, a Republican from Pender County, served three terms before resigning in September of 2017. Bob Mueller was appointed to serve out the term. He declined to run this year, citing his age. Carson Smith is now the Republican nominee. John Johnson is the Democratic candidate. We'll meet both of them today in alphabetical order. John Johnson says he's a native of Pender County. He worked for AT&T for 30 years after attending the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, followed by the Citadel, where he earned his MBA. Now retired, he has moved back to Burgaw. This is his first run at elected office. John Johnson, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. It's a pleasure to be here.
Today's interviews are pre-recorded. John Johnson, you say on your campaign website that there's not a great deal of difference in what Republicans and Democrats want, the end goal, anyway.
Yes.
In 2016, though, your district voted pretty solidly Republican. Why tackle a state-level race as a Democrat now in this district? What was the moment that made you say, this is something I need to do?
Well, I think that as we've seen in the news, there is a fairly significant partisan divide within the General Assembly. And I think it's more so evident there than it is among the general public. There seems to be, a wall between the two parties that is preventing cooperation and coordination, collaboration, and the pursuing of common goals. I believe that everyone here, in Pender County and Columbus County and throughout the Southeast, we have common needs, but it's not reflected in the performance of our elected officials in Raleigh. And I'm hopeful to become elected and make a positive impact towards bringing back civility and communication, and make some real progress to help us down here.
If you were elected, you would arguably be a member of the minority party in the General Assembly. So
yes.
How would you make any headway on anything when there is a strong Republican majority?
Well, I think that there are several things that can be done. I think as a team player, we have to recognize there's a little bit of give and a little bit of take. And, I believe that, for example, the preservation of our beaches, the renourishment of our beaches is very important. Tourism brings in a tremendous amount of money for the state revenues, but it's particularly important for us here. We have a lot of jobs that are dependent upon tourism. And I think that that's one issue that we have, hopefully a common goal that we can pursue.
What specifically do you think the legislature needs to be doing with regard to the beaches?
Well, yeah, I think that the beach renourishment issue is certainly different perspectives. I've read Dr. Warren Pilkey's book, the noted marine biologist at Duke University, who is essentially opposed to renourishment. But at the same time, I have spoken to hundreds of businesses in Surf City, and Topsail, Hampstead, along the coast, and they are essentially universal in their support of keeping the beaches preserved and also in their opposition to drilling off the coast. And as I go in and as I've spoken with so many businesses and so many households, I've visited, I believe, according to our count, maybe 2,100 households, canvassing and speaking with people, introducing myself and just being quiet and letting people talk to me and tell me their life story and to tell what is important for them.
And what are you hearing?
Well, in terms of the beach. They want to have a beach there. You know, having that buffer, you know, protects us against storms and that we've just experienced. I think if we had not had a strand there, there would have been significant more damage, you know, to the households and to the businesses. But also with regard to the offshore drilling, businesses and residences alike are almost universal in their opposition to offshore drilling. You know, the Deepwater Horizon event is very present in everyone's minds, and we certainly don't want to see anything like that happen here.
So it's fair to say that you oppose offshore drilling and seismic testing for oil and gas.
Absolutely.
Now, ultimately, the General Assembly doesn't have the final say in whether that moves forward in the Mid-Atlantic or not. That's a federal decision.
Yes.
How would you exert any influence on that?
Well, I believe that we could follow the same path that the state of Florida followed, in that if you have a unified voice from the both the legislative as well as the executive branches, and I believe Governor Cooper has been clear in his view of offshore drilling, then I think that will send a clear message on to Congress and to the executive that we wish to have the same rights and privileges as was allowed to Florida.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with John Johnson, Democratic candidate for North Carolina House District 16, which includes Pender County and a portion of Columbus. He faces Republican nominee Carson Smith. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. The drinking water supply is a huge issue for people, not just in House District 16, but along North Carolina's southeastern coast, and there's a great deal of finger pointing on both sides when it comes to who has done the right thing or not done the right thing in terms of ensuring that emerging contaminants are not only detected, but the companies that emit them are properly dealt with.
Exactly.
If you could control what happens next, where would you take North Carolina's response to emerging contaminants and a drinking water supply?
Well, there are several things I think that should be done. First off, the Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, should be adequately funded so that they have the necessary number of environmental scientists, you know, on staff, and that they have the necessary equipment, such as spectrometers and other devices that
will. Now, on that point right there, your opponents would say DEQ, which was DENR before it became DEQ, didn't do its job over the last three decades in terms of bringing to the fore the fact that these compounds were in the water. So why would funding that agency suddenly have teeth when it hasn't?
Well, I believe having the proper staffing has a lot to do with it. You know, they're across the board, not just with DEQ, but of many other departments across the state. You know, we have suffered from a lack of appropriate funding and lack of appropriate staffing and equipping. But here, you know, this is a vital thing. We have to have the folks that can go out and do the testing and then enforce the law.
Now, according to the Water Safety Act, which was just passed, there is this North Carolina Collaboratory, which will, it's a separate body that will now look at what's in the water, bring it to DEQ when necessary. Senator Michael Lee, who proposed this legislation, calls it a set of checks and balances. So all the responsibility isn't just resting in the hands of this one agency.
Well, I think that if we allow the agency to do the work that they were set to perform, there really wouldn't necessarily be the need for an oversight. But I'm not opposed to having oversight because it's such a vital and important issue for us here and those that live along the Cape Fear. And I believe that it is also important that we have the necessary testing and the personnel to perform the testing so that we can ensure that the levels of Gen X are reduced and ultimately eliminated But in order to do that, there has to be people that will perform the work. They have to have the equipment and training in order to do the work competently. And I support that. And I think that we should do whatever is necessary in order to ensure that that it's performed.
Since Hurricane Florence caused some hog lagoons in the state to breach and also caused coal ash to flow into North Carolina waterways, there are some questions now about the way hog waste is managed in the state. Not that those questions haven't been there before.
Yes.
When you talk to people who support the way that hog waste is currently managed, they point to the fact that it was a tiny percentage of lagoons that actually breached. In fact, most of the lagoons were successful. When you talk to people who oppose having hog lagoons in the state, you hear other states have successfully found other ways to manage the waste. Where do you fall, especially seeking to represent a district that does have hog farms?
Well, I think we have to treat these businesses fairly, and fairly meaning that they are businesses. And just like any other company that would have a potential pollutant or impact upon the neighbors, or whether it's nearby or downstream, and so in most industrial cases, there's some inspection required. And I think that, you know, with regard to the very large and industrial pork production facilities, there should be similar inspection of the hog lagoons to ensure that they're built according to a specification that would likely prevent spillage, and then to point out in those cases where the spillage could potentially occur, so it could be prevented. You know, I believe that, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so if we had a mechanism whereby these could be inspected, we can perhaps prevent problems further down the line. Just as you would any other business.
Would you vote today, if you could, to expand health coverage to the more than 625,000 North Carolinians who don't get it now, under the Medicaid expansion plan that is available to states that accept it? And if so, why or why not?
I would. I would, because I believe that we made a mistake a few years ago by not expanding Medicaid. 34 states across the country have. And as it relates to North Carolina, and particularly rural areas such as Pender County and Columbus County, it has a significant impact because many of the citizens depend upon Medicaid for their medical treatment. But it goes beyond that. Since 2012, in North Carolina, five hospitals have closed. These are Blowing Rock Hospital in Blowing Rock, Davie Medical Center in Moxville, our community hospital in Scotland Neck, Vidant Pungo Hospital in Bellhaven, Yadkin Valley Community Hospital in Yadkinville, and Moorhead Memorial Hospital in Eden, I think, is open, but it's under bankruptcy. And all of these communities, which are very much like Burgaw, where Pender Memorial Hospital is located, or Whiteville, where Columbus Regional Hospital is located, much the same size of towns, and hospitals performing much of the same duties. And just as these hospitals were closed as a direct result of this, you know, where our hospitals are at risk. The University of North Carolina Center of Public Health has recently produced a study that states over half of the rural hospitals in North Carolina are losing money. And according to the Health Resources Service Administration, HRSA, these closures that I just noted are due to the number of uninsured patients.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with John Johnson, Democratic candidate for North Carolina House District 16, which includes Pender County and a portion of Columbus County. He faces Republican nominee Carson Smith on the November ballot. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. John Johnson, it's no secret that North Carolina is still struggling to attract and retain excellent teachers in its public schools. What do you think the state's responsibility is to move the ball down the field on that front?
Well, I support Governor Cooper's plan to increase teacher pay to bring it into just the national average within 2 years. He proposes a 5% increase in pay this year and next year. I support that. And I also support additional means whereby rural counties, such as Pender County and Columbus County, have a means of attracting the same strength of educators as would go to Wake County or Orange County or Durham County or Mecklenburg County, you know, where we have, breadth of languages that could be learned, arts that can be provided.
Does that include additional funding from the state then? The state would give more money to Pender County?
Yes, I think so. And I do believe that it's deserving. I think that there should be a program whereby the talents are equalized, you know, for both the urban as well as the rural counties. And incentives should be offered to teachers so that they would be more attracted to come to places like Pender County, which is a beautiful area, or Columbus County, which is a beautiful area. Wonderful lifestyle, but the pay, I think, is an impediment.
So you're talking about boosting salaries, possibly providing financial incentives.
I do.
In addition to that.
I do. Just recently, I was at a communities and schools breakfast, and I had an opportunity to sit at a round table very much like this with four other teachers. And as I normally do, I sat there and introduced myself. I told them who I was and what I was doing. And I asked them about their experiences as a teacher. And then I was just quiet and let them talk, and I took notes. And I learned three intriguing things. The first thing is that 100% of the teachers that I spoke with had a second job. They either tutored or worked someplace else in the evening. So they all had a job in addition to teaching in order to make ends meet. The second thing is that I learned is that 100% of the teachers that I spoke with there spent money out of their pocket, had out-of-pocket expenses for materials that they used normally, you know, in the course of their daily duties working in schools that were not reimbursed. But the third thing that I learned was really the shocker. And as we were talking about our children and what, you know, they're doing and what their plans were and so forth, I asked them, as a professional educator, as a teacher here in North Carolina, would you recommend to your own kids that they follow in your footsteps and they become a teacher, an educator? And the shocking answer was that none of the teachers that were there would recommend to their own children that they also become teachers. So that, I think, is the, you know, canary in the mine in that.
And there are other issues for teachers besides just pay, and besides,
yes,
certainly we've heard that, you know, a lot of teachers have had to hold second jobs to be able to pay their bills.
Yes.
But there are also quality issues sometimes in the school system in terms of class sizes and in terms of having to deal with kids who are at different levels in the same class and the drain that puts on the teachers. How do you address that?
Well, I think that rolls back to having proper staffing in the schools. You know, we have issues where many classrooms are overcrowded. They're overcrowded because of lack of funding to hire teachers. And so we need to focus on having an acceptable student-to-teacher ratio, and that goes back to the hiring of teachers and having the resources available that can provide the necessary instruction.
The United Nations recently released a climate change report that emphasizes the importance of cutting emissions in order to keep warming within 1.5 degrees Celsius, and I think it was by 2030.
Yes.
It's not far down the road.
That's right.
Does North Carolina have any role in contributing to this effort? And if so, how?
Well, I think that potentially we do. We have heard in the last several months that since the United States has pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords, that some states are taking it upon themselves to continue along the same path as if we were a part of the treaty. And here in North Carolina, where in the last 2 years we have had unprecedented hurricanes, unprecedented flooding, Matthew 2 years ago, and now Florence this year, each surpassed records and in terms of damage. And I think that that is, indication that the climate change actually exists for those that didn't believe it before. And so there are things that the state can do to incentivize the development of non-fossil fuel-based technologies, incentivize the purchase and use of hybrid vehicles, and develop and incentivize mass transit.
So in what form? Would some of these be tax rebates, or are you talking about subsidizing public transportation around the state?
Well, I do not have the answer to that yet. I can certainly see where there's an absolute need for that, but I really haven't put my my hands around it yet so that I have a full understanding. But I know that something needs to be done, and I think that it's worthwhile that we investigate it and see what's a proper path. You know, one of the issues that I see is the planning horizon of most politicians. The planning horizon seems to be 2 years out, the next election cycle. But, I'm looking at a planning horizon of what will North Carolina look like in 2059. In 2059, I would be 100 years old, and most likely I would be long gone. But I think that we need to look at things in terms of long-term goals, like the development of a deep water port. It can't be done overnight. It can't be done in 2 years. It can't be done in 10 years. We need to look at what should North Carolina look like as we become where we're now, the 10th and soon to be the 9th most populous state. We may be the 4th or the 5th most populous state 25 years from now. What do we need to do to prepare for that?
What do we need to do?
Well, I think obviously we need to develop the transportation infrastructure to support that. We need to have plans in place so that our communities and neighborhoods don't flood, with just modest storms. I think that we need to have healthcare systems in place to support the, the baby boomers, AARP. For example, states that beginning this year and for the next 19 years, every day 10,000 Americans are reaching the age of 65. And as we all know, as we get older, we have greater health care needs. We need to plan for that. I don't see any of these things happening.
There are 6 constitutional amendments on the ballot, and certainly they've faced public criticism and even battles in court in all 5 former living North Carolina governors. 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans have spoken out against these. Are there any of the 6 that you support? For example, reducing the maximum allowable tax rate to 7%. That sounds pretty good. Who wouldn't support a tax cut?
Well, on the surface, yeah, it sounds like it's a good idea. And obviously, we want to keep taxes as low as possible. But as I mentioned a moment ago, we have just experienced another incredible natural disaster right here in our backyards with Hurricane Florence.
What does that have to do with the tax rate?
Well, it has a lot to do with the tax rate because it requires a monumental state response in order to rebuild the things that need to be rebuilt.
We have a massive rainy day fund at this point, and just this past fiscal year, the Republicans ended with a $600 million surplus.
Yes.
It's going pretty well.
Well, yes, and it's good that we do have the surplus, but we have to prepare so that we have the adequate tools in emergencies to do the rebuilding and replenish our reserves. And there may be emergencies where we have to raise taxes in order to do that. So therefore, I think it's wise to have the door open for those extreme
and
contingencies.
That's our time. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. John Johnson, thanks so much for sharing your views with us today.
Rachel, it's really wonderful. Thank you for inviting me over. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Coming up after this break, we meet Republican nominee Carson Smith. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.